You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Tuesday show, my co-host Rob Rang. Whether you're a regular listener or this is your first time joining us, glad to have you tuning in. It's been a pretty busy day on the rumor mill front. A lot of Russell Wilson discussion coming your way today, plus a commemorative throwback Tuesday for new Hall of Fame coach Tom Flores. Let's get to it. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Life comes at you fast in the NFL, and yesterday we were talking about all the great things Russell Wilson has done off the field, winning the 2020 Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, and he rightfully earned that award. Today, less than 48 hours after the offseason officially kicked off, it feels like this has become an annual event, Rob. The rumor mill is running full throttle in regard to the future of star quarterback Russell Wilson in Seattle.
Yeah, it really is. And that's the thing is that, as you said, Corbin, it is kind of an annual event. Of course, this year with the salary cap expected to drop a little bit, and we were already seeing some quarterbacks being moved, and, you know, even including in the division with the trade between Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford for the Rams. I think that it was somewhat predictable that you would start to see these types of conversations. Russell Wilson is going to be doing the entire media circuit because he did win the NFL's Man of the Year, the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. And so as such, he should be, kind of doing as many interviews as he possibly can. At the same time, he said some things that that might have some Seahawks fans, scratching their head a little bit, a little concerned that maybe their future Hall of Fame quarterback is possibly looking to angle his way out of Seattle and go elsewhere. It's going to be interesting to see how this all works out and what Pete Carroll and John Schneider think about Russell Wilson's comments.
It was less than 24 hours after the Super Bowl wrapped up, and there were reports coming from Jason Lockenfora of CBS Sports talking about the frustration in Russell Wilson's camp with the lack of protection and the direction that the franchise is going, and saying that it was something worth monitoring. And we know that this has been a discussion that's come up the last couple of years. There was the report that Russell Wilson was Cleveland Browns offered the first round number one overall pick to acquire him in 2018, ended up using that pick on Baker Mayfield. Then there was the talk he wants to go to the New York Giants. And it just seems like, again, every year this has been a topic that's been discussed. And I'm just going to be out front on this right now. For those that are panicking about Russell Wilson not being back with the Seahawks in 2021, you have absolutely no reason to panic. He is going to be under center in week one. There are 39 million reasons why the Seahawks would take a $39 million dead cap hit if they traded him this offseason. After June 1st, then you could trade him, and it would, I believe it's only a $26 million dead cap hit if they waited till then. But then you're not getting picks for this year's draft. So what would be the point of making a move there? Teams have explored the possibility of acquiring Russell Wilson, but the Seahawks are not entertaining those calls. They're not going to be discussing trading their franchise quarterback. So right now, you're not going to lose Russell Wilson. He is going to be under center. No concerns there. However, I do think that he sent some warning shots today. Again, he's flexed his muscles a little bit. The power that comes with being one of the NFL's highest paid players, one of the NFL's best quarterbacks. He was throwing his weight around a little bit in the two interviews that he had this morning with Dan Patrick Show and a Zoom interview with a number of reporters as well. On the Dan Patrick Show, a couple things that he touched on. He said he wanted to be more involved in the personnel decision-making process, and that he, at the end of the day, it's his legacy. It's your team's legacy. He wants to be more involved, and that dialogue should happen more often. He also said, "I'm not sure if I'm available or not. That's a Seahawks question. Hopefully I'll play in Seattle forever." The key words there, the "hopefully I'll play in Seattle forever." A lot of the people that were reporting this quote left that out because, of course, context does not matter in today's generation. But nonetheless, there were some interesting comments made by Wilson about how involved he wants to be in the decision-making process when it comes to personnel. He talked about Tom Brady picking players up that he was familiar with and he trusted once he went to Tampa Bay this past season. We saw the success that they had bringing in players that he was involved recruiting to Tampa Bay, Rob Gronkowski being one of the big ones there, obviously. And we've seen all the rumors out there about the trades too. And so it doesn't sound to me, you consider the interview that he had on Zoom as well, it does not sound to me like Russell Wilson is trying to force his way out right now. I don't think that's the case. I think he wants to be in Seattle. He's made that clear. But the thing that I did not necessarily appreciate today was the shot that he took at his offensive line talking to reporters when they were asking about his frustrations with the way the team has been built around him, especially when you consider the offensive line most of last season played pretty darn well.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I thought the offensive line did play well. And what you're referring to, Corbin, is part of that Zoom interview. And the quote was basically, you know, part of it, like any player, you never want to get hit. That's the reality of playing this position. Ask any quarterback who wants to play the game, Wilson said. At the same time, it's part of my job. I've definitely been hit. I've been sacked almost 400 times. We've got to get better. I got to find ways to get better too. And to me, that's one of the interesting things about that quote. It's similar to the quote that you mentioned on the Dan Patrick Show. And I appreciate that you added in that second point about hopefully I play in Seattle forever, that a lot of media members just kind of conveniently forgot. Same kind of thing here. He did say, I've got to get better too. And I think that that is notable because it's also correct that he does have to get better. You know, I watched that Super Bowl here just a couple of days ago, and I saw the Kansas City Chiefs try to blitz Tom Brady. And because he was able to diagnose the blitz before they ever came, then he was able to get the ball out of his hands or switch to a run very, very quickly. Russell Wilson is not necessarily one of his strengths, is his pre-snap diagnosis, despite the fact that he has been a starter as long as he has. That is something that I think that he needs to continue to improve on. And then the other side, we sometimes talk, Corbin, about your past as a running back and how that has allowed you to kind of evaluate running backs maybe in a different level. For me, I was a terrible, let me repeat that, terrible offensive lineman back in high school, but I did play the position. I can tell you right now that when you have a quarterback who is the athlete that Russell Wilson is, it's much more difficult to block for them because you never know if they're going to go their left or their right. And you, by the way, are trying to try and block somebody who, at least in my case, was bigger, stronger, faster, and meaner than I was. And so it makes it incredibly difficult. And so that's the thing, is that the Seattle's offensive line, in part because Russell Wilson is getting the huge contract that he is, it's very, very difficult to be able to pay free agents to come in and play for the Seahawks. It's also, when you are drafting as late as the Seahawks have, then it's very difficult to draft those types of players. And so it is going to be difficult to surround Wilson with the offensive linemen, the Pro Bowl cast that you would like to have him surrounded by. But at the same time, he does make it even more difficult on them just because the style of player he is and the fact that he does have such confidence in his ability to throw the ball over the top. And that's one of the things that obviously you have to block that much longer. So yes, Seattle's offensive line does need to improve clearly, but as Russell Wilson said, he's got to find ways to getting better as well.
Yeah. I don't think Russell Wilson was trying to throw the offensive line under the bus, but I could see why the players that blocked for him last year, if they see these comments that he made, I could see why they would think that that's what he was doing, because this is a group that finished ninth in ESPN's pass block win rate out of 32 teams last year. Now, the second half, the group did not play near as well. The first eight games, they were firing all cylinders, and some of that had to do with injuries. Late in the year, Brandon Shell was not healthy, and this team certainly suffered because of it. When he was not right, and he was getting exposed in the playoff game as well, that was a big deal. That was a big part of the reason that they struggled to move the football, particularly in that wild card loss. But if I was one of those players like Brandon Shell or Damian Lewis, I'd be a bit upset about the comments that Russell Wilson made, because you're basically saying, yeah, my line didn't do a good job, and that's why we finished the season the way that we did. When, if you watch the film, it's clearly evident that a good chunk of the sacks Russell Wilson took were on him for holding the football, or, as you mentioned, you know, trying to escape the pocket, and it puts the offensive line in a really difficult position. Not unloading the football, doing the scrambling type stuff that he likes to do, it sets you up to get hit more often when you're extending plays that way. And so there are a lot of different factors at play here. You can say the play calling fit into this as well, but I just didn't necessarily appreciate the way that he said this just come out. Obviously, he's not going to enjoy getting hit. No quarterback does. But I just thought the way that he said things here, again, it just sounded like he was throwing guys under the bus. I don't think that's what he was trying to do, but that's why wording matters. And so I think that's something that's interesting you watch here. I haven't seen any linemen come out today with comments in regard to that, and I don't know that we will. But it's certainly something that I would monitor if we're talking the offensive line that's been protecting Russell Wilson. When you consider how well that group played most of last season, and three of those guys are under contract going into this next year. Later in the show, we're going to talk about ways that maybe the Seahawks can take the things that Russell Wilson said today and they can heed to some of that advice to try to build this team around Russell Wilson. And I think it's a different approach that's going to come into play. So that's going to be a fun discussion for you and I to take part in later in the show. But first, coming up next in the second quarter, it's Throwback Tuesday. The Seahawks had a former head coach in Tom Flores elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame this past weekend. We're going to look back at his legacy. He obviously did not have a lot of success during his time in Seattle, but we're going to look at some of the positives that may get overlooked from his time in the Pacific Northwest. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Football season may be over, but plenty of great sports action is coming soon with the NBA season underway, March Madness on tap, and Major League Baseball closing in on spring training. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, my co-host, Rob Rang. February is Black History Month, and the Locked On Podcast Network is honoring the challenges and success of Black men and women in sports with a new series called Locked On Presents More Than the Game. This week, Candace Cooper of Locked On Tar Heels and Erica Ayala of Locked On Women's Basketball discuss the opportunities and challenges that come with being a Black woman in sports. Subscribe to the Locked On Presents podcast feed on the radio.com app or wherever you get podcasts. It's Throwback Tuesday this past weekend. We've obviously already talked about Russell Wilson winning the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. No players with Seahawks ties getting voted into the Hall of Fame. However, there was a coach that was on the sidelines for three seasons with the Seahawks, Tom Flores, who will finally be enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I know a lot of Seahawk fans, the ones that have been following the team since the early 90s, they remember those lean years when Tom Flores was on the sideline. The team went just 14-34 during the three seasons that he was head coach, including a 2-14 season in 1992. Everybody remembers that lack of success, but Rob, Tom Flores was certainly deserving of making it into the Hall. He was the first Hispanic head coach to ever win a Super Bowl, and he led the Raiders to two of them, 8-3 postseason record. He absolutely belonged in Canton, and I think when you look back at his time in Seattle, I do think he gets a little bit of a raw deal because of the record that they had when he was on the sidelines.
Yeah, I mean, he just the Seahawks during his time here, they struggled to find much help at the quarterback position. And, you know, it's kind of like the conversation we were having previously with Russell Wilson, you know, and all the NFL teams are going to do whatever they possibly can to get themselves a quarterback. We all know that the quarterback is the most important position in the game. It's the most important position in all of sports, really. And, you know, it kind of goes back to Tom Flores. I mean, he was a phenomenal player. He was the first Hispanic quarterback to win a Super Bowl ring. He was the first minority coach to win a Lombardi Trophy. As you mentioned, the Raiders won two of them. He was also an assistant coach. Mike Ditka is the only other man to win a Super Bowl as a player, as assistant coach, and as the head coach. And again, Flores did it twice with the Raiders. And so he was kind of brought into Seattle to basically be the savior, to turn everything around. And, you know, during his time with the Raiders, of course, he had a very opinionated a team owner and Al Davis. He came to Seattle. He had Ken Behring, who, you know, quite frankly, pushed his weight around a little bit, I think, in some of the personnel decisions that wound up happening there, most significantly being one of those aforementioned quarterbacks in Dan McGuire. who wound up being selected early. There's been a lot of talk out there that that Tom Flores was personally higher on a quarterback named Brett Favre, who wound up having a lot more success, obviously, in the NFL than Dan McGuire. And that is one of the things that I would really focus in on, is while you can certainly criticize Tom Flores for his struggles on the sideline during his time in Seattle, as you mentioned, 14 and 34 in three seasons as the Seahawks head coach. You look at some of the players that he drafted, and that 1990 class was absolutely fantastic. And the thing that you mentioned is that in that ugly season, 1992, you know, what a lot of Seahawks fans hopefully will remember about that, besides the fact that it was an ugly season, it was the fact that Cortez Kennedy won a defensive MVP. And think about what an amazing accomplishment that is, to win defensive MVP in a season in which the team wins two total games. He truly was remarkable, and Tom Flores deserves a little bit of credit for that as well.
Yeah, you look at that 1990 draft class. This is the reason that I think that he gets kind of a raw deal. And again, I understand why fans, they badmouth Tom Flores, because when you look at the way things panned out when he was the coach on the sidelines, they had a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. They had some skill guys that were very talented players, and yet they could not translate that to victories, because the most important position under center at quarterback, they just could not find a reliable starter. And they went through a number of different players during the three seasons that he was on the sidelines as head coach. But you look at that 1990 class, it wasn't just Cortez Kennedy. Obviously, that was the crown jewel of the drafts when Flores was the general manager. And that's the thing some fans don't realize, is that Flores was the president. He was the team president, general manager, and the head coach during his time in Seattle. He was the president and GM from 1989 to 1994, and he was the coach 1992 to 1994 after the Chuck Knox era ended. So his imprint obviously was left on everything that was going on in Seattle, whether it was, you know, drafting players, and in the last 3 years he was there on the sidelines trying to get this team to win more games. He didn't have a lot of success. But that 1990 draft, he also got Terry Wood in the second round, who to me is one of the more underrated players in Seahawks history. He was a very good linebacker for a long time in Seattle. Robert Blackman, the other player they picked in the second round, is an underrated safety that gets overlooked because the Seahawks have had so many good safeties in their franchise history. But he was a good player that would come up and stick you. He could pick off passes, had 10 and a half sacks in his career. And then, of course, one of our former guests here on the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Chris Warren, a perennial Pro Bowl running back that originally entered the league as a fourth-round pick and was a special teams guy, eventually evolved into one of the best running backs in football. Those were the first four picks in that 1990 draft. And until the Seahawks got Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner and company in 2012, I think you could make a strong argument that this was the best draft in Seahawks history. And Tom Flores was the general manager that helped put it all together.
Yeah, he really deserves a lot of credit for that draft class, as you mentioned. I mean, absolutely spectacular. Those four players to start it off. You know, I still remember listening to some of the games and just hearing about players like Bill Hitchcock was one of the guys that was kind of just known for being a real surly, nasty, ornery kind of a blocker. And so he was one of the late round selections that year. And that's the thing, is we give John Schneider and the Seahawks scouting staff right now a great deal of credit for their ability to find these diamond in the rough players. And believe me, they absolutely deserve that. They are one of the absolute best in all of the NFL at doing precisely that. But Tom Flores was doing that as well. You know, I mentioned Hitchcock and he is a solid player, but when you look at that 1991 draft class, and that was the ugly one, Dan McGuire, Doug Thomas, David Daniels, those first three selections, none of them wound up being nearly as good as was hoped. But the Seahawks wound up getting a Pro Bowl kicker in John Casey, and more importantly, a Pro Bowl defensive end in Michael Sinclair in the sixth round. So that really was a demonstration of his ability to find some late round talent there. You look in the 1992 class, and it wasn't necessarily necessarily another spectacular class, but you got a quality tackle in Ray Roberts. You got a future Pro Bowler, although albeit mostly on special teams, in the wideout, Michael Bates, who was one of the absolute best gunners in football there for a couple of years there. And then, of course, you got into the 1993 class, where again, you found another Pro Bowler in a late round selection of Michael McCrary, as well as some quality football players. Dean Wells was a good linebacker. Carlton Gray, you saw flashes of him. And of course, again, the quarterback in Rick Meyer, who again had some flashes at times, was certainly was more productive player than Dan McGuire was. But that ultimately is the issue here, is the Seahawks never got any kind of real consistency at the quarterback position during Tom Flores' time in Seattle. And that's why there are so many Seahawks fans who, at least in my opinion, mistakenly think back on those Tom Flores years in Seattle as not being as fun, as productive, and not necessarily warranting the Hall of Fame credentials that I personally believe Tom Flores has deserved for quite some time.
Yeah, and that's just omitting what he did with the Raiders as well. Again, we talked about all the incredible things that he did on the sidelines with the Raiders. The fact that he won a Super Bowl as an assistant for John Madden, too, on top of it, and where he stands historically as the first minority coach to win a Super Bowl, and he did it twice. So he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But I'm going to close out with this. The last draft that Tom Flores was involved with was in 1994, and obviously that team was 6-10. They finished 6-10 the year before. They just couldn't get over the hump, in large part because of the quarterback position. But that was another draft. The Seahawks only made 5 picks that year, in part because they had to make some trades to be able to go up and get some quarterbacks. And again, they misfired on both those in the Flores era. But he got Sam Adams, who had a fantastic NFL career, was really good for the Seahawks in the first portion of his career. And then Kevin Y, future Hall of Famer, that probably should have been a Pro Bowler in his 4 years with the Seahawks. But again, they weren't winning enough games out in the Pacific Northwest. Nobody was noticing them, but Kevin Y was playing really well those first 4 years. We know what he did with the Jets and the Titans the rest of his career, but those are their first 2 draft picks, and both those guys ended up having really darn good careers. Sam Adams wasn't a Hall of Famer, but he certainly was a fantastic player for a long time, and Kevin Y going to Canton a few years ago, one of the best centers to ever play the game, and so he had his hands on that draft as well. So you think about 1990, that draft, what he was able to find in 1994. There were plenty of quality players that were brought into Seattle during that time. Unfortunately, they just couldn't figure out the quarterback position. And understandably, Flores is blamed for that with those 2 first-round misses with Dan McGuire and Rick Meyer. But again, the whole point of this, looking back at the legacy of Tom Flores, again, he's not going to be in the Hall of Fame because of what he did in Seattle. But I just want fans to take a step back and look at his entire body of work and realize that while not everything went as planned, and certainly the results in the field were undesirable when he was coaching for 3 years, there were a lot of good things that came out of the Tom Flores era too that get swept under the rug a lot given the records that they had during that time. When we come back in the third quarter, building off our first quarter discussion, some of the comments made today by Russell Wilson about the state of the Seahawks, and in particular, where the offensive line stands moving into the 2021 season, Rob and I are going to discuss maybe it's time for John Schneider to make some changes in how he approaches free agency and the general offseason plan. Looking forward to this discussion when we return. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck right locked in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang here on a Tuesday episode. NFL analyst Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson host Locked On's Peacock and Williamson every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt give you the national perspective all around the NFL, covering all the latest news and insight on every game, team, and move around the NFL. Get your picks, previews, and much more every weekday with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. In the first quarter, we were talking about some of the major comments, some of the significant comments that Russell Wilson made in interviews with the Dan Patrick Show, as well as a Zoom interview with various reporters today. He was talking about his legacy, his involvement in personnel decisions, issues with pass protection, his frustrations about getting hit too much, where he stands with his future with the Seahawks. There was a lot to unpack today in those couple interviews that Russell Wilson had. But I think when you look at the big picture here, Rob, it's clearly evident that Russell Wilson is throwing his weight around as a franchise quarterback. He understands that he can make the power play. We started to see that last year when he said the Seahawks need to bring in more superstars. And then a week later, during Super Bowl week on Radio Row, he was talking about how he would prefer the offense to be more up-tempo and throw the football more. The Seahawks responded by giving the keys to Russell Wilson this year. We saw what happened with the Let Russ Cook movement in the first half, and then things cooled off. But they certainly went towards a more pass-happy offense. They were starting to do that in 2019. They went out, they traded for Jamal Adams. So they checked off the superstar box. They brought in some talented players to help supplement this roster around Russell Wilson. So they're certainly responding to their quarterback. And so I think he's looking at it this way, like, hey, I'm the highest, second highest paid player in the league. I have a lot of clout in this organization. They were listening to me last year. So this is what I think we need to do this year. And with that in mind, I'm going to throw this out here just because you and I have talked about this before several times on previous episodes. John Schneider has not been a general manager that typically likes to go after big fish in free agency. In fact, even your mid-level fish, he generally has avoided like the plague most of the time. And a lot of it's been because they haven't had money to spend. And they like to get a lot of middling, mid-level veteran players in the third phase of free agency on bargain contracts. And there have certainly been some examples where that has panned out. I think you could look at Brandon Shell last year. They signed him fairly early in free agency, but he was not one of the top tackles that was out there on the market. But they brought him in on a two-year deal, and that one worked out pretty well for them. Then there were some other moves they made, like signing Greg Olsen, that certainly did not pan out. You look back at earlier years, giving Luke Jokel $8 million to me is still maybe the worst free agent signing that the Seahawks made in the John Schneider era. It just seems like there have been too many times where they've been burning money on players that weren't going to move the needle when it came to their championship aspirations. So I guess my big question for you, do you think it is time that John Schneider takes a page out of his former mentor, the late Ted Thompson's book? Thompson typically did not play the free agency game either in terms of going after big fish, but late in his time with the Packers, he started to change a little bit the way that he viewed that. We saw him pay big bucks for Julius Peppers when he was in an advisor role, and he was still heavily involved in the decision-making process there. They signed Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith to over $110 million worth of contracts in free agency. That was unheard of for the Packers. Do you think the time has come, especially with the comments that Russell Wilson made, for John Schneider to turn the page a little bit and take a more aggressive approach in free agency, trying to find a real difference maker in March?
Well, I think if he's going to try and find a real difference maker before the start of next year, he may have to consider that option because, as we all know, the Seahawks lack draft capital this year. At the same time, it's also exceedingly difficult when you have one player in the quarterback and then another player in the middle linebacker, in Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, obviously, who are taking up just such a huge percentage of your cap. And so, therefore, I think that it might, if Seattle is going to be able to be players for any of these type of pricey free agents, you mentioned, Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, and what a shocking move that was for the Green Bay Packers, a team that has traditionally, as you said, kind of stayed away from that, avoided that like the plague. I'm not so sure that John Schneider is going to be ready and willing to do that just yet. But at the same time, he may have very little choice. I mean, you're talking about a hyper competitive man in John Schneider, and obviously Pete Carroll's exactly the same way. And these are two guys who are always looking to try to be involved in every single trade out there. And of course, they know better than anybody what the Rams are doing just a little south of us. And so I think that they're looking at that like, wow, we, you know, the Rams made the big splashy trade for Jalen Ramsey, and Seattle comes back with the trade for Jamal Adams. I think now that the quarterback situation has changed for LA, you know, Seattle takes away a couple of their coaches. I think that there is going to be some type of big move that the Seahawks are looking to acquire, because clearly this is a team that is not quite good enough to compete for a Super Bowl at this point, and yet they do have a quarterback who at least believes that they should be competing at that level. It's just going to be interesting to see how they're going to be able to pull that off. To me, when we had this conversation just yesterday about what are five moves that the Seahawks might have to consider, I almost wonder, and I know that this is not something the Seahawks have been willing to do in the past, but considering how cost prohibitive Russell Wilson's contract is at this point, maybe he is the one that you attempt to extend a little bit longer just to try and create a little bit of salary cap flexibility. You know, Tom Brady used to do that with the Patriots all the time. Drew Brees has done that with the Saints all the time. Maybe it's time for Russell Wilson to take a little bit of that money out of his wallet and be able to give the Seahawks open up the purse strings a little bit to allow them to be able to actually add to the talent on this roster.
I don't know that an extension is going to play into what Russell Wilson wants right now, because he's still got 3 years left in his deal, and we've got all these rumors swirling. Somebody in his camp is putting something into these reporters' ears about him being discontent with his current situation and being frustrated with the pass protection. What I do think can absolutely happen, I wrote an article about this earlier today, and I built it around the offensive line. And this was before Wilson made his comments about the pass protection, by the way. Clearly, your center and your left guard positions right now are standing wide open. The two starters from last year, Mikey Potty and Ethan Posick, are heading towards free agency. You would love to be able to find upgrades at least one of those positions, if not both. And so certainly the Seahawks are in a position where you look at their salary cap right now, they've barely got over $4 million estimated in cap space right now. So you're not going to be able to make any big moves with that. However, John Schneider's got a lot of different strings that he can pull to open up cap space. And one thing that he can do is turn Russell Wilson's base salary this year, most of it, into a signing bonus. And if he does that, you can create up to $12 million in instant cap space. Right there's enough that I can go out and get somebody, maybe like a Corey Linsley, to put in at center, who was a first-team All-Pro last year. And I don't think the Packers are going to have the money to afford to keep him. I think you can go aggressively pursue him. And now you have instantly upgraded the pivot position with a guy that is a proven All-Pro talent. And then you've got the ability to extend players like Tyler Lockett, Carlos Dunlap, Jaron Reed. Those moves are going to help you position yourself to lower their cap hit significantly for the 2021 season. Now you have more money that you can play with, and maybe that brings somebody like Washington guard Brandon Scherff into the picture, or Patriots guard Joe Thuney. Both those guys are All-Pro caliber players. And so those are the kind of talents I think Russell Wilson would get excited about having blocked for him. It would clearly send the message that the organization is hearing what Wilson is saying here, and they're adding talent to that front line. Those just have not typically been the kind of moves that John Schneider's made. The only big-name free agents that he has signed were back in 2011. They spent a lot of money on Sidney Rice and Zach Miller to bring them into the fold. That was a much different situation, though. You didn't have Russell Wilson under contract eating up a large chunk of your cap. And so they've got to weigh what they want to do here. Me personally, I think you have no choice here. You have got to go out and try to get one of these top offensive linemen at the center and guard spots, because you don't have the draft capital to work with in April to be able to add a player that's going to be able to move the needle for your championship aspirations. You can appease your quarterback and you can improve your Super Bowl odds by signing one of those three players that I mentioned there. And they have the ability to open up the cap space to make it happen. Now the question just got to be, are John Schneider and Pete Carroll going to be willing to do what they got to do to make that happen?
Well, that's a good question. And I'm going to take your you know, kind of proposal here as far as changing some of the contract money that Russell Wilson has and making an immediate kind of signing bonus, or a bonus, and just using that strategy and trying something a little bit different. As you mentioned, when the Pete Carroll and John Schneider, when they have gone into free agency in the past and been willing to spend some money with TJ Houshmandzadeh, or excuse me, Sidney Rice and Zach Miller, with Greg Olsen this past year, it has usually been at the skill position. And so I almost wonder if Seattle's answer at center already lies with your current right guard in Damian Lewis. The fact that Pete Carroll kind of dropped that in the postseason press conference to me was interesting. I could see Lewis sliding over to that center position. I could see the Seahawks essentially gambling on the upside of Jamarco Jones and Phil Haynes as being your two guards. To me, that's Jamarco Jones' most the position that his body fits in best is at the left guard position. Phil Haynes is a right guard mauler. That's been his kind of framed from the get-go. And then Jordan Simmons is kind of your backup at both of those. And instead, if you do have that money to be able to spend on a free agent, while it could be one of those offensive linemen, if you want to get Russell Wilson excited, I'm not so sure that it is draft or it is paying for an offensive lineman, although arguably it should. I think the way to get him excited is to get him another pass catcher out there, again, either at the tight end or wide receiver position, considering that all of the draft picks and everything that Seattle has used the tight end position in the past, I think that position is a wide receiver. And there are so many good wide receivers in this free agent class and this wide receiver rookie class that I think can get Russell Wilson excited again and get this offense humming again.
Yeah, I mentioned T.Y. Hilton yesterday. You know, maybe you could put yourself in a position where you're able to sign somebody like Corey Linsley to upgrade your center position and get T.Y. Hilton. I wouldn't be shocked if the money that is being paid for a player like Hilton maybe isn't where he's expecting at this point, just because teams are hurting cap-wise with everything stemming from the COVID-19 pandemic. Teams just don't have a lot of money to spend, and he is in his early 30s. He hasn't had a 1,000-yard season in a couple of years, and so that might be the kind of player that the Seahawks can get on a shorter-term deal at a reasonable price that you can couple with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, and it would be a great situation for all parties involved. And certainly that would excite Russell Wilson getting another weapon on the outside. But at the end of the day, the center of this discussion has to be around the offensive line because of the things Russell Wilson said today. You know, if they went out and just added a receiver and then they go out with Jamarco Jones and Phil Haynes as their guards, Haynes has played in like one game in the NFL. He's been hurt constantly. Jamarco Jones has had his share of issues with staying healthy too. Hasn't started a lot of games in the NFL. If I'm Russell Wilson and that's the way the Seahawks respond to what I said today, I'm starting to pack my bags up and say, all right, next year I'm getting ready to force my way out of here. That's the way I view this from Russell Wilson's comments. And so I think you absolutely have to be going all in on trying to find a way to get one of those top tier proven offensive linemen that can instantly upgrade that unit up front, not only help your pass protection, but also help your run game as well. And I think that would be a huge difference maker for this team moving forward to help them take that next step. And I think if you do take that next step, you get to the NFC Championship game or get back to the Super Bowl, then I don't think you have to worry about next offseason Russell Wilson saying that he's looking for a trade or reports coming out that he's unhappy. You go deep into the postseason to make a Super Bowl run, then that is going to silence all those things, because ultimately Russell Wilson is all about winning. That's all that matters. And if you're able to do that, then it silences all these other issues that we're seeing crop up here the last 2 or 3 years.
No question about it. That's the one thing that I'm actually kind of comforted in listening to some of the some of Russell Wilson's comments, just because it is basically lock and step with Pete Carroll and John Schneider. You're talking about three hyper competitive individuals who are part of a team that has actually won it and done it together. And so because of that, I do think that this is still a team, as Wilson acknowledged in almost all of his comments, is that he does have that trust with this team. He does realize that they need to improve, being some of his teammates, but also that he needs to improve. And I think that is the ultimate answer, is almost perfectly like the former Raider and Seahawks coach we talked about before, as well as the owner. Just win, baby. Everything else works out.
Yep. The next couple of weeks, it's going to be really fascinating as we get closer to free agency. How the Seahawks, how John Schneider and Pete Carroll respond to the comments that were made by Russell Wilson today, because that's going to be very telling to me what they choose to do here. If they go with the route that you mentioned with the guards, and maybe that's what they're going to do because they have gone the cheap route at that position before, and they do like Phil Haynes and Jamarco Jones. But if they go that route again, I think Russell Wilson can be sitting there like, okay, that's how you reacted to the comments that I made. That is not what I was looking for. So how the Seahawks respond and they react accordingly the next few months to me is going to be very telling in regard to the long-term future of the quarterback as well as the franchise. You can follow me on Twitter at CorbSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on our Wednesday show, Rob and I are going to begin our position-by-position analysis as we get closer to free agency and the draft. We'll be starting at defensive tackle, a position that could potentially have some big changes coming here in the next few months. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Go Hawks.